welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias. The newest field of healthcare to experience biosimilar competition is the ophthalmology space, particularly the retinal disease treatment sector. Currently, the United States and the United Kingdom each have two ranibizumab biosimilars, and the European Union only has three, all of which were approved in the last 2 years. Additionally, more ranibizumab biosimilars referencing Lucentis and a slew of aflibercept biosimilars referencing Eylea are expected to enter the market over the next few years. Although all data shows these products to be bioequivalent to their reference products, the lack of real-world evidence around the world has left many ophthalmologists and biosimilar experts struggling to gain clarity on the safety of these products. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Sarah Yim, Director of the FDA's Office of Therapeutic Biologics and Biosimilars, to discuss these issues and the FDA's efforts to instill public confidence in ophthalmology biosimilars. Dr. Yim has worked extensively to help create the FDA's education material on biosimilars and spread the FDA's view that biosimilars are as safe and clinically effective as the reference products. Prior to her work at the FDA, she was a clinical fellow at the NIH's National Institute of Arthritis and Musculoskeletal and Skin Disease and served as a medical officer for the U.S. Army for over 10 years. She also hosted the FDA's workshop on increasing efficiency within biosimilar development programs, presented at the DIA Biosimilars Conference, and was a featured panelist for our most recent LinkedIn Live event on ophthalmology biosimilars last fall. Welcome, Dr. Yim.
Thanks for having me on.
To start us off, what actions has the FDA taken to instill greater confidence in ophthalmology biosimilars, especially when the industry doesn't have a lot of real-world data to rely on?
So I think FDA is doing a number of things. For ophthalmologists specifically, we've supported other folks' education and outreach efforts through panel and stakeholder presentations. And we plan to do more of that and create additional educational materials to address some of the questions that folks in the community are asking. But we sort of view ophthalmologists as among all the relevant, clinically relevant stakeholders, right? There are folks in other specialties who have biosimilar and interchangeable products available to them. And so we focused on creating educational materials for healthcare professionals, such as the curriculum for healthcare professional schools. And then we are working with continuing education providers such as Medscape to facilitate healthcare providers' knowledge of and comfort with biosimilar and interchangeable products. But I will say that I think irrespective of this, or irrespective of the availability of real-world data, what would help more than anything, I think, is getting biosimilars in the hands of ophthalmologists and having them gain their own experience with them and share that with their peers.
Now, there's been a lot of discussion around the FDA's decision to grant an interchangeability designation for Cimerli, a product offered through the medical benefit. You have spoken about this decision several times the past few months, basically saying that the FDA did this because Coherus Biosciences, the manufacturer, basically asked for the product to be reviewed for the designation. There have been some concerns about companies causing confusion about what interchangeability means by obtaining the label for products that won't be impacted by it. What do you say to skeptics who are worried about this happening?
It's kind of tough because for better or worse, the Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act defined standards for biosimilarity and interchangeability, but didn't limit which products could seek interchangeability. So if an applicant requests the determination of interchangeability and the application or supplemental application contains information that's sufficient to show that it meets the standards for interchangeability as described in the law, then that product can be determined to be interchangeable irrespective of whether it's a medical benefit or a pharmacy benefit drug. I think we still have work to do in terms of being able to explain biosimilarity and interchangeability and what these terms mean and what they don't mean. For example, biosimilarity and interchangeability both mean that the product is analytically highly similar to the reference product. So interchangeables don't indicate a higher degree of similarity. And I think there's some confusion still out there on that. There are basic messages like this that we're going to have to get out there to try and counter the confusion that's happening. But there's complexity in the statutory criteria and there's complexity in the science. So it's not so straightforward.
Additionally, CIMERLI was granted interchangeability without having to complete a switching study. You stated during the FDA's workshop and the DIA Biosimilars conference in September that this was because of the route of administration that ranibizumab products require, which in this case is a direct injection into the patient's eye. Why was the route of administration enough to grant the designation for this product?
So the FDA determined that the risk of clinically impactful immunogenic response when alternating or switching between CIMERLI and Lucentis is low. And a lot of that has to do, first of all, with the scientific context, right? The eye does not have a lot of immune cells around that are likely to create an anti-product response. Secondly, the product is administered directly into the site of action in the eye by an ophthalmologist. So the considerations might be different for a product that had to be absorbed into the bloodstream first and then travel in the blood to the site of action. But even if an anti-product immune response developed to CIMERLI, it would have been likely to have no minimal or no impact because it's being put directly in the desired location by the ophthalmologist. And of course, you know, the contents of the BLA have to be consistent with the determination that a switching study was not needed, like it needs to not raise other concerns that might need to be addressed via a switching study.
What has the FDA done to clarify what interchangeability means and the safety of switching between reference products and biosimilars?
Well, we've been really working hard to develop education for healthcare providers and patients about biosimilars for over 6 years. And we have multiple educational materials on our website in varying degrees of detail, which I mentioned some of the education that we've worked on more recently, including the curriculum and Medscape. And we've participated in extensive outreach to disseminate the materials, and we sort of are collaborating with other government agencies to get those materials out to their listservs. So we're trying to get the information out there, but despite all that, we know that patients and healthcare providers still have concerns about using biosimilars, and there's still confusion about interchangeability. And so we're continuing to develop and refine our materials and plan for more extensive outreach. But I do think that a key element in sort of making people feel better is just, as I mentioned before, the gaining of experience. I think when you don't use something or when you first start using something new, it's a little bit scary and nerve-wracking. And then as you develop experience with it, it becomes a lot less so.
There have been some calls for the United States to do away with interchangeability designations and switching studies for biosimilars for quite some time now. What is your stance per se on the importance or relevance of interchangeability designations and whether the United States should keep them?
This is a difficult question, which I'm not really in a position to have a stance, quote unquote, on, because FDA's job is to implement the relevant laws. However, I understand that the US is relatively unique in having biosimilar and interchangeable categories and that it's confusing. And also, I'd say that based on our experience so far and the fact that the high standards are expected for both biosimilar and interchangeable products, and most of these products have very low risks related to immunogenicity, I would say that the benefit of having the two categories so far is not clear. However, scientifically, one could envision that there may be utility of having two different categories for a few products with really high-risk immunogenicity. For those products, having the option of a category that doesn't come with automatic substitution might allow for them to be approved as a biosimilar, but not as an interchangeable product. I don't think there are many biologics that would likely fit that scenario, but there are potentially a few.
Now, given the level of uncertainty and unfamiliarity that ophthalmologists have right now regarding ranibizumab biosimilars for retinal conditions, how is the FDA preparing for all of the other ranibizumab and aflibercept biosimilars that are expected to enter the U.S. market in the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, we have ongoing education efforts and initiatives, and we're trying to expand on all of that to increase understanding and awareness in all the relevant clinical groups, including ophthalmology. And we're going to plan to increase our education efforts to this audience in the coming year, including development of additional Medscape CE coursework and direct stakeholder outreach.
We've also seen the FDA softening to the idea that clinical efficacy testing may not be necessary to establish the safety, efficacy, and bioequivalence of biosimilars compared to their reference products. What has occurred to change the FDA's mind on clinical efficacy testing, and is the FDA working on efforts to get rid of the requirement for approval?
So, as reviewers get used to reviewing and approving types of products, they become more comfortable, I think, that they understand what's important and when it's important. I also think there has to be intentional communication across disciplines, and in the case of, you know, our products, especially regarding analytics. And this is an area that's often not well understood by clinicians at all. So the more comfortable clinicians get within the agency with the principles that support reliance on analytical similarity, the more selective we can be about the circumstances when we might ask for clinical data. There are many different types of therapeutic biologics, though, and I think it really wouldn't be very scientific to take one big brush and apply it to every potential case that may arise in the future. So I think the expectation should fit the context and considerations of the products in question, and that would depend on possibly characteristics of both the reference product and the biosimilar. But yes, we've gotten a lot of experience, for example, with monoclonal antibodies. I think we're getting more comfortable with products in that class, and it's a very popular class, but there are a lot of different proteins out there.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
You know, sort of related to what I was just talking about, I think I didn't quite answer the last part of your question, which is what are we doing to try and help? I mean, we did have a recent workshop looking at streamlining expectations in comparative clinical trials. I think we're also working with our international colleagues to try and kind of get alignment on sort of regulatory expectations around the world, because I think it's fine for us to say in one case maybe we don't need it, but if another big agency says they do need a comparative clinical study, then, you know, a comparative clinical study is going to be done. So we're coordinating with our regulatory colleagues, and we are going to be trying to get another workshop together this year on this very issue.
Well, Dr. Yim, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this special episode of Not So Different. This interview is part of a 3-part multimedia interview series expanding on the discussion from our LinkedIn Live event, Insight, the Future of Biosimilars in Ophthalmology Care. You can find additional information on everything we discussed today, as well as the LinkedIn Live event and the other parts of this series in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.